That's coming up later on today's show. But first, hopes are waning for another COVID relief package from Congress. Negotiations between the U.S. House and Senate have been stalled by disagreement over how much aid should be provided. The last bill that got a vote foundered, with most Republicans voting in favor and all Democrats voting against it in the Senate. Alyssa Slotkin is a Democrat representing Michigan's 8th District in the U.S. House of Representatives, and she joins us now. Representative Slotkin, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
The Senate bill that Republicans were debating was, as I said, substantially smaller than what Democrats said they could support, and it was basically dead on arrival in the Senate. What do you think? Is there going to be another try?
Well, listen, I mean, a number of us on both sides of the aisle are pretty frustrated that the leadership in the Senate and the White House and the House aren't kind of locking themselves in a negotiating room and figuring this out. The need is serious. And so since those negotiations broke down sort of at the early end of August, there's been a group of us, the Problem Solvers Caucus is our name. It's 50 members, 25 Dems, 25 Republicans, have been quietly working on the outline of a potential deal. We just announced that this week. We think it's a good starting place, a good compromise. And it sort of takes the smartest pieces from the House and smartest pieces from the Senate and puts them together in one proposal.
Can you tell us a little bit about what might be here that would be appealing to Republicans in the Senate?
Sure. I mean, I think it has a lot of overlap in terms of, you know, money for testing and healthcare, money for, you know, small businesses, the renewal of our PPP loans, which has been our primary vehicle on getting small business loans out. It does talk about both liability protections for our businesses as well as protections for our workers. And we know that Senator McConnell has been laser focused on those liability protections. So we absolutely support having that conversation. It does include some additional support for state and local aid, which is something that Governor Whitmer and a lot of our mayors, Democratic and Republican in Michigan, have been calling for. But it responds to the concerns from the Senate that aid only go for lost revenues due to COVID, not pre-existing debts, not insolvent pensions, you know, not any old bill, but just specifically for the lost revenues, which is important. And it continues unemployment assistance. This is something the president has been very clear about and kind of finds a middle ground between the price tag that the House wanted and the price tag that the Senate wanted.
So the $64,000 question, what's the price tag on the Solutions Caucus bill?
So I think the bill is a much smaller number because it's only a bridging bill through February 1st, right? It's not taking us for another year. So I believe the total top line number was $1.5 trillion. And then we would revisit come February if we need to do more, if we think we're still far away from a vaccine, if we're still in a difficult place, then we'd revisit after February. But it's a shorter time span, so it's a much cheaper proposal than the one the House had proposed and that we voted for at the end of May.
Well, for that matter, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi did not have much good to say about the Senate bill because it was so much smaller than the House bill. Do you have any assurances from the leadership that the Solutions bill could get support?
Well, listen, we went ahead and did this as 25 Democrats and 25 Republicans in the House because we felt like we owed it to our constituents. I can't get through, you know, a grocery store without someone asking about some aspect of another relief bill, you know, COVID relief bill. So I'm not going to say she was thrilled with us coming forward with this proposal. We now have the president saying he's willing to deal based on this number. He hopefully will bring the Senate along. And I've been urging Speaker Pelosi and our leadership to do the same thing and get in the room. What has changed is that she's now said she's going to keep us in session in Congress until and unless we get another COVID bill. We were scheduled to be done, I think, October 3rd ahead of the election, the last month to the election, and we really pushed to say we don't want to go home to our constituents if we haven't figured out another deal.
Yeah, we should mention the Senate is preparing to recess so its members can campaign. And we should also mention you are in the process of defending your seat. Republican Paul Youngie is your main challenger. What will you be saying to voters who want to know why more federal employment aid, for example, isn't coming?
Well, this is the problem, is that right now it's totally rational for the average person to look and say, hey, you passed four bills on an emergency basis, bipartisan basis in the spring when we were in the thick of the emergency. Now, of course, we're within 2 months of an election and Washington isn't able to figure out a fifth deal. And so I understand that. I understand that. And so that's why I'm pushing my own leadership, frankly, to stay here and get the work done. And, you know, it's silly season because of the election, but this is a crisis. And we have to be mission focused when there's a crisis. So I agree with them. We should have a deal. And that's why I'm agitating.
If there were only, say, three things that you were able to put forward in the bill, what would be most important for you to include in the final package? Is there a line?
You know, if I only had to pick three things, I would say we need school and childcare support for all of those schools that are trying to manage distance learning, giving some of the students devices and broadband, you know, boosters who don't have them, cleaning. I mean, we're taking this at a hide right now, and it's very expensive for us to do school and then, of course, childcare, and we can't unlock the economy without those things. Support for our state and locals. I think people need to prepare themselves that if we don't help cover lost revenues for the state and some of our cities, we're going to have layoffs of police, fire, first responders, teachers, the very people who are on the front lines of this crisis. And then continued small business support. The PPP loan program has been, I think, very successful. And everywhere I go, the business leaders are saying, hey, you know, I don't know if I need a loan now, but I may need one come winter. We really need to see a renewal of that program. So if I had to pick three, I think those would be the places where I'd start.
If I can ask you about another matter, we received an email from a voter in the 8th District who requested and received an absentee ballot, a digital ballot. It had the wrong information. Vice President Mike Pence was not listed as Donald Trump's running mate, but rather the Libertarian candidate for president, that's who appeared as the vice presidential nominee on the Republican ticket. She said your office was aware of the problem and working on it. You're familiar with what she was talking about?
I am. And this is obviously a story now we're seeing out in the papers about what looks to be about 400 ballots that were prepared for voters overseas. Where I think, from what I understand, a formatting problem at the state resulted in the ballot being incorrect. We got that call from that voter. I understand that the state figured it out almost immediately and is in the process of cleaning that up, issuing new ballots. And because they're voters overseas, they can receive these ballots electronically. So it doesn't have to go through the mail and the post office, and we'll get to them.
Prominent Republicans, not the least among them President Trump, have been taking every chance they can get to point to misprints as a reason that mass vote by mail cannot be trusted. Do you have any response to that?
Well, again, I think they're taking a clerical error and blowing it completely out of proportion. But this is just sort of the latest reason why the president is tweeting about his distrust of voting absentee, you know, and despite the fact that he voted absentee, he has been laying down these markers since basically April, making very clear that he's not going to respect the results of the election because of his distortion of absentee voting.
Just one last question. You've spent a fair amount of time this year working on the problem of sourcing out protective equipment to help people on the front line with COVID. The United States has gone through a pretty massive effort to quickly retool manufacturing to try to get sources either domestically or outside the country. And yet we're still in a situation where there aren't enough masks, and there are a couple of other items that hospitals are concerned about running short on again this year. Do you have any insight about what the next step is to trying to get PPE into the hands of people who need it?
Sure. And this is an issue I've become pretty obsessed with because of our experience in March and April, where I literally became, you know, a middleman between companies and the state trying to figure out how to connect the dots so we could get a 78-cent mask in from China. I mean, it was really insane. And I think part of it is making sure that we know what's actually in our stockpile and we build back our national stockpile in a way that's transparent and knowable and predictable for our states. But frankly, longer term, I mean, we can't just rely on faith that we won't need, you know, have another second wave and need this PPE again. So I am now completely focused on this idea of bringing some of those supply chains back to the United States, back to Michigan. And there's ways to incentivize that with the government. We have been working on 7 bills, totally bipartisan, and I expect them to come to the floor in the next week and a half. And it's about doing what we do at the Defense Department, which is saying if something has a national security value, if people's lives depend on it, we should have a significant portion made here in the United States. And I believe that for medical supplies and for pharmaceuticals. And we were completely left with our pants down in March and April because we had outsourced those supply chains so significantly to China and other countries. So we have to stockpile and be aware and save up if we have a second wave. But then we can't just keep letting this happen. Who knows what the next problem is? We need to bring some of that manufacturing home. And I'm working with a lot of our local businesses to properly incentivize that.
Alyssa Slotkin is a Democrat representing Michigan's 8th Congressional District. Congresswoman Slotkin, thanks for your time.
Thank you.